Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back. I hope you had a great weekend. I'm going to jump right into it. I am so excited to welcome my friend, an amazing, badass entrepreneur, mom, Erin Keating. Erin and I met through our common friend, Sherry Salata of Oprah fame, of her own business fame. Sherry reinvented her life, and Sherry likes people around her that have done the same. So she says, you need to meet Erin. And I met Erin. I did her podcast. I'm like, OMG, you need to be on the Smart Dating podcast. Erin spent 20 years in the TV business. She blew up her own life in a good way, is now an entrepreneur, a mom of two 12-year-old twins, and the anchor and all of it for a podcast called Hotter Than Ever. Erin, we are so happy to have you here.
Bella, that's a gorgeous introduction. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I keep telling everyone about Smart Dating Academy. I'm like, if you really want to fall in love, if you're serious about this shit, you gotta give Bella a call.
I love that. Oh, that gives me all the warm fuzzies. So thank you. You are as beautiful inside as you are on the outside. So Erin's always glowy looking, you guys. It's like, right. And she's like, you're getting me fresh in the morning, but here we are. So I hope you guys are listening to this fresh in the morning. So Erin, let's jump right in. Tell us your story about what happened to you at age 50 and where you are now. We want to hear it all because so many of my listeners and you, dear listener, are going to get so much out of her story because I sure did.
Well, you know, my life was sort of humming along. I was successful in my career. I was pretty senior up in a media company. I had a lot of people reporting to me. I was making money. I was married. I was married for 16 years. We were together for 18 years. I had twins. I was grinding really hard to keep all those plates spinning and to keep that life going. And to stay in denial about, the things that weren't working. I was like, if I can just keep working and earning and, you know, prioritizing things moment to moment, then we'll get through this. But I was pretty burnt out. And as a result, obviously it's a virus, but I got COVID. I got COVID in August of 22, which was, you know, I was vaccinated, but I was working so hard. I was grinding so hard.
So hard and so successful. Like, you're being very humble right now. You were like queen of the world.
I really, quote unquote, had it all.
You did.
You know, on paper, things look really amazing. But in reality, I was anxious, stressed, exhausted, miserable. The marriage was not working. And I got COVID and I worked through the first week of it because I was working from home, as is so easy to do. You're like, I'll just go on that conference call. It doesn't matter.
Mute my call.
To death. Exactly. Let's just take some DayQuil and see if we can get through this. I could not. I got COVID pneumonia and I went to the hospital and they were like, come right this way. They checked me right in, because I really wasn't well and I needed intervention. And I wasn't on, like, you know, I wasn't intubated. I wasn't any of that stuff, but they gave me all the hardcore things that they knew how to do for someone who was vaccinated and young. And they put me in a single room, and that room felt to me like Canyon Ranch.
That's when you know
things need to get better.
Yeah, totally. I was like, I'm in a hospital room with tubes in isolation.
With tubes in me. And I'm like, oh,
this is so relaxing. Literally,
WTF.
No one could justifiably call me and ask for anything at that moment in my life. And that was the first time that had happened in a decade. And, my kids were about 10. And I think I realized kind of in that moment in my life, sometimes illness does something for you, you know, and it really gave me kind of a cosmic reality check. And I came home from the hospital. My husband was so stressed at having to take care of the kids by himself for 48 hours. I was really only in the hospital for 48 hours of like, you know, remdesivir and all the awful things that you hear about, all the medicines and steroids and everything. But they got me to a place where I was good enough to go home.
Yeah.
And he was pissed because I think he started to envision what his life would be like as a single parent. And it scared the shit out of him. Sorry, I like to curse. I hope that's okay.
Fine. You're like harbinger of things to come, sir.
Yeah. So, you know, when we had not been getting along very well and we had not had sex in a decade, and we had had all kinds of ups and downs and bumps in the road. And, you know, I had some really profound revelations about, you know, how my marriage was going, how my life was going, how devoted I was to work, where I was putting work in relation to my priorities in my life. And I put it above everything else because it was the only place where I was feeling, making me feel good about myself.
Yeah.
And I had, you know, some revelations about how brief life can be and how limited our time here on planet Earth is. And, you know, as our mutual friend, Sherry Salata, once asked me, you know, how much time you think you have left? And I was like, oh man, like, I don't know. This is the first time I'd ever confronted my mortality and really had a chance to take stock of like, where am I today? And what have I been telling myself is okay? And what is actually okay? And what do I want? And do I want more of this? And the answer was just a big, profound fuck no.
Yeah.
You know, we decided to go to couples counseling for the fifth time. And we agreed that if it didn't work, if it didn't help us, we would, you know, we would make a change. And so, miracle of miracles, my husband agreed to move out. And I started to come back to myself. And then I got laid off.
Oh,
boom, boom, boom.
So you're near deathbed, 48 hours, light bulb goes off. You come home. You're like, none of this is working for me, except work is great. And then husband moves out and then work Chernobyl
goes away, goes away. And
the one thing that was keeping you like, okay. And as what working women work, you put more in, you get more out a lot of the times. Yeah. It fuels our self-esteem. You do more, bigger paycheck, lather, rinse, repeat.
Exactly. Exactly. And I knew how to be successful because I've been working hard in my professional life for 20 years. It was a thing that I made for myself from nothing, right? Yeah. My career.
Yeah.
And it was the only thing I felt I had any agency over. And I didn't, because when you work for someone else, you can get laid off at any time, turns out.
Absolutely.
I decided to go on a retreat, in Italy with Sherry. I spent a week there kind of envisioning what my life could be. If I had a chance to start over, which it was looking like I did, I had a clean slate. So I went on a retreat for a week. Before that, I had started dating a little bit, and I'll talk to you a little bit about that. Not a conventional approach. I met a hot French guy in Rome. I was there. So I did a week on the retreat and a week in Rome by myself. And, you know, went on the apps in Rome found this gorgeous French guy and spent a few days with him. And, you know, came back and sort of started to reinvent everything, started to put plans in place to create the podcast that I now do called Hotter Than Ever, where I really talk about the unconscious rules that we've been following in our lives and identifying those and how we can break those rules and find a new path to being freer and happier and sexier and more self-expressed. So that's really what I started to conceive when I was in Italy. And I also realized that I really had some years of like love and sex and, sensuality to reclaim. And so when I got back, I went on what I call my dating rumspringa.
Dying laughing. Tell everybody what a rumspringa is. A
rumspringa is when the Amish kids are let out of the community to see what the real world is like for a couple years before they decide to come back or not come back and commit to the Amish lifestyle. So they go buck wild.
Buck wild.
Yeah.
Is there any limit on rumspringas with the Amish?
I think so. I think it's a year. Maybe okay. It's a couple years, but
we let you out of the gate.
Yeah.
Come home.
So, right. Exactly. So, I really just set out to see what I was missing in the world. And I really worked to reconnect with myself, in 1,000 different ways. And one of those a profound way for me was sexually. And so, you know, I had a lot of lovers. I had lovers, multiple lovers at the same time, not on the same night, but I was like dating different guys, and
sleeping with different guys.
Yeah. 100%.
Let's just call it out.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was great. I'm happy to call it out. It was great fun. And what I was practicing during that time period was like, what do I like? What feels good to me? Who feels good to me? What kind of dynamic is appealing to me? I was also practicing boundaries, telling people the truth, telling men what I liked and what I didn't like, how they could treat me and how they shouldn't treat me. And being totally honest, because I think I lied a lot in order to keep my marriage alive. I pretended that I wanted things I didn't want. I pretended I was okay with things I wasn't okay with because I couldn't conceive of raising children by myself when they were younger.
Well, and I'm guessing families of origin can also lend a hand.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Just taking a little stab at it, at not knowing how to navigate conflict, not knowing how to use your voice, right?
No, and absolutely.
All of the fear that we come to this with.
Absolutely. And fear of, you know, what if I really say what I think and what I feel, how does this marriage persist?
Yeah.
Because what I was invested in was the status quo. I was invested in, you know, we're a couple with two kids and two careers and we have this lifestyle and we, you know, and we're creative people and we do, you know, I had this whole narrative about who we were and it was all external because what was happening inside the relationship was not functional.
No.
And we weren't, you know, we weren't happily co-parenting and we weren't there for each other. We were adversaries more than we were partners. And I didn't admit to any of that until after he moved out. None of that became really clear. And so, you know, using all of these sexy guys as an opportunity to, you know, really find out who I now am. Because when you get married in your early 30s, like I was looking for kids. Like I was looking to have kids. We got married when I was 34 and I didn't get pregnant until I was 38. So like I was against a clock, I felt like, and what I wanted out of marriage was children. I did not know how to conceive of love in a healthy way.
And that's what so many women do, you know, between the age bracket of 32 and 44, right? We work with a ton of women in that age bracket. And the risk is our ovaries and our uterus take precedence over 100%. The partner that we're choosing, because the ends justify the means, right? I want kids and I'm going to jump out of the game of musical chairs now. And even though I think there's a lot of red flags here.
There were.
Right. There's always red flags, right? We dust them under the rug, under that beautiful antique oriental rug that, you know, and we do that. And then all of a sudden we're like, wow, maybe kids will bring us closer together. And voila, they never, ever, ever do.
They did in the beginning for us, because when you have twins, you're like in an emergency all the time.
Right.
You know, and we were really, he was very hands-on, which I don't think he would have been with one kid. You know, we were all hands on deck.
It was like a crisis.
Yeah. Until they started to have personalities and they were harder to manage. And all the interpersonal stuff that we were challenged by in our relationship with each other became a challenge in our, you know, parenting the kids together. And so, you know, I feel like I've come through on the other side of this thing with a new vision for my career, with a new vision for what I want my life to look like, and being having the freedom to make decisions on my own that come from my desires as a woman who is about to turn 52, as opposed to my desires when I was younger and I was needing to build everything from scratch, right? Like, I have a career. I have self-esteem. I have my children. I have a home. I have some more resources internally and externally. And now I get to invent my life from this place. What do I want the back half to look like? And so that's what I talk about on my podcast. I try to get insight from other people about how they're doing it. I love to hear about people's pivots and how they've made radical changes. I love to hear about people finding love and relationship, doing things conventionally and unconventionally. I love to talk about sex. It's my favorite thing. You know, that's where it's at. I dated a billion guys. I happened to find someone who I really like, and we've been dating for like 7 or 8 months. Who knows what this will be? Who knows? But for today, he's a sweetheart. He treats me really well. He's hot.
Like, he's younger.
Really? He's 10 years younger. Yeah. He's a former Marine, you know. I mean, he's a very different kind of guy than anyone I've ever dated. And it turns out that's working for me. But I would never have gone out into the world looking for him.
No. And he just came through. Was he one of the members of the Rumspringa?
Absolutely.
Or he was. Okay.
Yeah, like, he was.
Stands out.
I was just so hot for him. Honestly, it's like I went backwards. You know, you would not give me the, you would not approve of my approach, Bella.
You're like, this is so good. We got to slim it down. And so.
Oh, well, after like 2 or 3 weeks, I was like, I don't really want to see anyone else. And he's like, yeah, I don't either. And I was like, okay. Then I had to call all the other guys and be like, I actually want to give this other guy a shot. Like, you know, and they're all honestly like the feedback from those guys was like, good for you. Good for you.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone wants a special person in their lives. Even these slutty dudes that I found,
exactly.
You know, even they, we had very human relationships. It was not superficial. Because I'm not superficial and I wasn't treating it that way. So these guys were really nice and they were like, well, I wish you the best of luck. I hope it works out for you, sweetheart.
Right. And so even though you knew you needed to sort of just sow your oats to some extent.
Absolutely.
And you were in a sexless marriage for a decade, right?
Yes. I'm and still making up for that. I will be making up for that forever.
You're making up for lost time. And what I find lovely about it is you went into it intentionally,
yeah.
Right? A lot of times, and you and I have had chats about this, like at Smart Dating, we talk about sex exclusivity, right? Because our clients are coming in a different place.
Right.
They're saying, I've rumspringed, I've done all of the things, I'm now ready for the lid to my pot. So we're like, okay, let's prevent prematurely bonding to somebody that might have red flags, that might not want a serious relationship, right? So they're in a different quadrant to some extent,
100%
where you came from. And so I think that there's something for everybody. You have to have those conversations, dear listener, with you, and put the mirror inward and say, what do I really want right now? And so I'm really glad that you did something that was so good for you, and you glow. And through that healing of finding a bunch of guys that were nice, it's not like you had a bunch of jackasses.
No,
right? Like,
they were really nice. And we had some I'm friends with to this day. And, you know, our conversations are flirty, but like, you know, we care about each other and we were empathetic to each other. A number of them were in a similar boat to me, you know, had been in unhappy relationships. We're trying to figure out what they were up to in the world. You know, we're reconnecting with themselves sexually and their own desires. Like, it's not just women, you know, guys go through stuff too, and 100%. And reassess what they want out of life. So that was a learning experience for me as well, just to make friends with, you know, a bunch of these horny dudes.
Right. And it's like, you know, maybe if your car tire went flat at 3 a.m, you could call on one of them if they live in the neighborhood. Like, your relationship is like, okay, it's cordial, it's nice. And you went into it clear-headedly on both sides. It's not
honest.
Like, hey, I'm looking for, you know, the lid to my pot right now. You're like, hey, I'm
Let's
looking
have fun.
For something. I want some fun and I want something light. And neither of you got too attached to the outcomes. And the outcome was just, let's be friends. Let's have good sex. Let's hang out. So coming into it with that intentionality, everybody's got to know where they're at. So if you're a smart dater listening to this, remember, you're here because you're looking for the lid to your pot. So don't say, hey,
don't
why can't I go out
advice.
And have a long spring of? You can. You've got the steering wheel of your life. You just have to think about, what do I consciously want and need right now?
Yep.
And that's it.
Yeah. For sure. And I think there are a number of things that you can do to be hotter than ever.
I'm a totally unqualified
person to give advice other than my own life experience and, you know, my own observations and personal wisdom and what I've gleaned from the people I've been talking to. I mean, first and foremost, it's an inside job. It is not about, you know, your facelift or your weight loss or your
Brazilian
whatever.
Or whatever.
No, no, all of those things can play a part if you want them to. But at the end of the day, it's an inside job, and you can make yourself magnetic and attract the life you want if you clear out all the gunk that is in the way and get really clear about what you want your life to look like. And I think the first step to that is to just take an honest assessment of your life. You know,
how do you do that? Can you give us like a framework? I think everybody's got gunk, whether you're single, whether you're in a relationship. I think everybody's got stuff. It's part of being human. So if you're talking about it's an inside job, like, what do you tell people to do? Like, where am I happy in my life and where am I not happy?
Or where are those little pinchy pain points that you gloss over, right? Those things where you feel it in your body that you know you're saying something that isn't true, or you're placating someone, or you're doing something on a regular basis that makes you feel exhausted. You know, your body, the truth lives in your body. And I've long been someone who wanted to like just live in my head. And in this period of my life, I'm much more integrated between my physical self and my external, you know, and the intellectual piece of me, right? So one thing that really helped me to cultivate this willingness to be honest and invite change is to go within. Meditation, prayer, nature, journaling, you know, get in touch with the cosmic forces, get in touch with that quiet, universal place inside yourself. I am not a woo-woo person. I am not going to tell you to get crystals and burn sage and read your horoscope. But I do think there is a stillness and a confidence and a calm and a grounding that is possible if you cultivate regular practices of just quiet and introspection. I am a big believer in writing. I am a big believer in like journaling clears stuff out, leave it on the page, you know, then go and live your life.
Yeah.
And I think if you start to cultivate honesty in yourself and cultivate a willingness to invite change as opposed to resisting change, if you allow yourself to redefine who you are today and center what is important to you now, like that, there's some excavation to do to get to that. I think for a lot of people who've built up a complex life structure and partnership and parenting and career, but there's always things we're tolerating.
Yes.
In life, you know, whether it's that like sticky door handle that's been sticky for 20 years, like that takes stress. That causes stress. That's a pain point. You can resolve the smaller ones and check those off your list and then start to look at the bigger ones. You know, what do you wish you could change, but you think you can't? Because you can. You can. It might not be easy. But like the lie I told myself is that I could be happy in a marriage without sex. Like that's one of 1,000. But I literally said to my best friend at one point, I was like, you know, so we don't have sex, but we're like, you know, we're really close. And we're co-parenting and like, that's not important, but she's known me. She knew me before I got married.
She's like, hey, liar.
But she didn't say that because she prioritized staying in a friendship with me and being there to support me while I lied to myself.
Yeah. She's like, hey, it might be important to you. Like, let's dig deep.
Yeah.
And I knew. The person
in the beginning, though, she was like, mm-hmm.
Sure,
totally. You know, she totally knew I was lying and she didn't want to call me out. She didn't want to make me feel ashamed. She just wanted to be there for me.
You guys, something came to mind, and this is an exercise that I've maybe given to you on this podcast before, but it rings true with based on what Aaron is saying. Sit down and as you journal and get still, make a list of all of the things in your life that you tolerate. And I challenge you to have less than 50. There is a whole boatload of stuff from the sticky doorknob to, you know, the button on your robe that's been missing for 2 years, to your squeaky brakes, to your lack of love, to all of the things in your life that you tolerate. Sit down, get quiet, put some quiet music on, or just sit in silence and make a list of all of those things that you are tolerating, and immediately then go through that list. And look at it and highlight the things that you can change right now. What is the stuff that you can bring to the tailor? What's the stuff that you need to get to the Goodwill? Do you need to take your car to the mechanic? Just every one of those things, acknowledging them and fixing them will free up energy by a logarithmic factor. You'll be shocked at, oh my God, I feel so much better. So you couldn't be more right. I love what you're saying about this being an inside job and really getting still and looking at what you're tolerating. So make that list. Let me know what's on that list and how things have gone. We want to know, but I'm telling you, do this stuff. It works. Don't just sit there and go, yeah, wow, that sounds good. Get a piece of paper out, people, listeners, and do this.
Yeah. I mean, it's, oh my God, I'm such a goody two shoes. I love an assignment. So, you know, I'm going to go and do that after our conversation, because there's always stuff to clean up.
Always.
There's also always relationships in your life that aren't serving you, you know, and that group of people who you like think you need to be friends with, but you actually don't feel good around, you know, or those people that you've been attracted to, you've not let yourself say yes to the party invitation. Like you can make different choices. You can, and you know what? People might think you're nuts. People might think, oh my God, what are you doing? I mean, I definitely had to, before I launched the podcast and decided to be a more self-expressed person. You know, I sat behind a corporate title for 20 years and carried the party line and was a great evangelist for the products and services that I was promoting. And I was great at convincing people to do things on behalf of a corporation. But when it comes to doing that stuff for yourself, it feels risky. It feels scary. It feels like, oh my God, am I really going to talk about this stuff publicly? And for me, it's what I'm called to do. It's what I'm called to do. And to ignore that call is to live a less self-expressed, less fulfilled, less happy, joyous, and free life. And all I want now is a happy, joyous, and free life.
I love that. I love that. And tell us more about Hotter Than Ever in our own journeys. Like, what else can we do? I love the inside job. I love listening to your calling. And if you get still, all of that. What else in your sage wisdom are Hotter Than Ever, Yoda? Tell us.
Take extraordinary care of yourself. Like, the times in my life when I have attracted partners and love into my life were the times that I've been taking the best care of myself. So treat yourself like someone you love and admire. Treat yourself like you would treat someone who you adore. And that means spoiling yourself with self-care, whether that's therapy or working on how you talk to yourself inside of your head. There's a constant radio station playing the hits, playing the criticisms,
playing the crazy.
What do you see when you look in the mirror? What do you hear when you listen to yourself talk? Like, you know, how do you feel when you're around your parents? Like, just, you know, do you hear the echoes of their critiques of you from your childhood? Like, tune in and reprogram. Give yourself some replacement language for how you talk about yourself to yourself. And then also, like, you know, get a facial, get your nails done, blow out your hair, go through your clothes, wear things that make you feel sexy. Every morning I think to myself, am I going to feel hot in this? Am I going to feel sexy and good in the way that I'm presenting myself in the world? Who do I want to show up as in my life? Eat healthy, delicious food. Eat the things that you love that make you feel good. Exercise. You know, put on lotion. Like, I would deny myself even lotion when I was working hard. I wouldn't
have
even
time.
I would tell myself I didn't have time. But guess what? You have time for what you believe you have time for. And you have time for the things you care about. Like, you do the things you care about. So if you care about you, you're going to do the things that help you take care of you. And it's really hard when you're a working mom and you've got a house to maintain and you've got children's lives to manage and you've got a career and a boss and you've got a team working for you and you've got a this and you've got a that. But the better care you take of yourself, the more you tell the world how to treat you.
Absolutely. And just a little side note, even when you are the boss, right?
Yeah, especially when you are, I think it's even harder, you know, where you're, you know, if you're a good boss, you're taking care of your team. It's just another position in your life where you're responsible for other people's well-being.
100%.
You know,
100%.
Where are you in all of that? Where are you? And why do you fall to the bottom of the list a lot of the time? That was my experience. I fell to the bottom of the list. I had time for work and taking care of my kids. My friendships fell out. My marriage, was unhappy. So I didn't prioritize us dating each other, caring for each other. I mean, I did on the surface, but I was pretending. I was pretending.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah. And, you know, it's so interesting. I love everything you're saying. And I feel like when I personally don't take good care of myself, and I do things that give me joy, because you're right, I'm taking care of a company team. I'm taking care of my domestic team, my husband, my teenagers, my 100 clients at any given time. And I find that I can find solace in bad food. Right. And it's
temporarily,
like,
at
the
end
of the day. Right. And it's like, I'm going to say, oh, I'm not going to eat processed food today. I'm going to be really good. And by the time it's 7:30, 8 p.m. and the day has just given you 100 paper cuts, those chocolate chip cookies look really good. And I realize it's probably pretty benign on, you know, things that you could be doing to yourself, but it's like you want that instant dopamine hit. And but it's like crack. It feels really good for 5 minutes and then it feels like crap 2 hours later. So it's really thinking, what's going to really make me feel good? Not just in this moment, but what's going to make me feel good in 4 hours? And I have to really help myself think in that way. I don't know if you share that.
I mean, I have struggled with compulsive eating and have been in 12-step program for that. And so food is like a huge issue. And it's, I talk about food and body image on my podcast.
I got it too.
You know, I think women really struggle. I know almost no one who doesn't have some sort of story going on about their food and their body, and their worthiness as it's connected to those things. And so for me, sometimes, you know, I know that if I eat 2 salads a day, that is when I feel the best. I don't eat 2 salads a day.
I know, like, girl.
I know that feels really good, but I also know that bread and butter is awesome. And so is frozen yogurt, you know? And so, like, you know, or a very small cup of ice cream, if I allow myself that, which I, you know, I have problems with sugar. I shouldn't do that. But I also now am in a place where I feel like, maybe I can come back to this and try moderation. I don't know. That's an experiment that is probably doomed to failure. But for me, because if it's not an option, it's not a problem usually. But that's a whole other conversation. But I would just say, like, listen to how you're talking to yourself about how you eat, you know, because if you're like, fuck it, I'm just going to eat this shit and it doesn't matter. And I need it right now. I need it right now. Like,
that's me. How did you get in my head?
And that's we all have that little, like that gremlin. We all have that gremlin, right? Now, if you are more centered and more connected to yourself and not pushing through and running over things in your life, and you are able to be a little bit more in the moment, which is certainly what I aspire to, you know, from now until the day I die, is not dwell too much in the past and not project too much about the future and try to be right here now. That it's a little easier, right? All those conversations are easier because you can hear them. But sometimes you're on automatic pilot, you know? So to me, it's about how do I get off automatic pilot and make conscious choices in every area of my life.
And that comes back down to being able to be still and get back to that place. Because if the monkey brain continues to run the show, right? Hello, cookies and donuts.
Hello. Yeah.
Hi. Yeah. Nice to meet you again. I'm Bella, your best friend.
Right.
Remember
Hello,
me?
Sugar crash. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. 100%. Yeah. And so, yes, that conscious mind, you know, is there any last gem that you want to leave us with, Aaron, about hotter than ever?
Two more things.
Two gems. Oh, wow.
Two more things. So as part of that going within and, you know, taking an honest assessment of your life, identify your dreams and take action towards them. Mm. Your professional dreams, your lifestyle dreams, your romantic dreams. It does not matter. The how is not our job. The job for us is to identify the what. What is it that I want?
What do I want? What do you want? The
what
four
do you want?
Words.
100%. And we were all raised by Oprah, you know, and Oprah says the thing that the successful people she knows have in common is that they know what they want. They have identified what they want. Because the second you know what you want, the universe steps into alignment. I really believe that. I am not a cosmic woo-woo girl in a California kind of way, which is where I live. But I do believe in the law of attraction. And I do believe that the clearer we are the more the universe will give you what you want.
You know, here's an analogy to your point that I give my clients. Like, you know, when you're looking for something, you see it. Said, if I told you, Aaron, walk into a cocktail party and tell me all of the people that are wearing red, you would dutifully come back with a little pad and say, okay, 11 people were wearing red. Then I'll ask you, how many people were wearing purple? And you're like,
no idea.
I was only looking for red.
Oh, perfect.
So to your point, when you know what you want and you have that conversation with yourself, do you know what starts to happen, right? The universe seems to move partly because you're seeing the things that you want.
Yep.
And you are able to go get them, because when we're in our gloom and doom, when you're looking for red instead of purple, and if purple is the happy thing and you're continuing to look for the red, which you don't want, this is what happens, right? So you don't need your crystal. You don't need your incense. You need to go, what do I want? Okay. And then you'll start to see things appear that you've got to take action. You've got to open the door. It's not like you can sit there jamming your face with donuts or Doritos and just say, wow, come into my lap right now. But no, you have to first be able to say, what do I want? And then start to see that. And then take first step, second step, third step. That's how this stuff works.
Just put your feet on the path. You don't have to know where the path is, you know, how it's going to take you there. Just know that it'll take you there or somewhere better if you are super clear about it. Focus is a superpower. And we all have the capacity to focus on the things that we want and positive things in our lives. We just don't tend to do that. We tend to focus on the negatives.
Right.
Okay.
And when you do want, right, you know, the little decisions that you make every day. If I want X and I'm aware of it every day, I should make a decision to do the thing that will take me closer to that versus farther from that. Right. Every day you're filled with decision trees, yes or no. So know what you want, people.
Totally. And then the last thing that I think we don't talk enough about is pleasure. I think we don't focus on what gives us pleasure in life. And part of my radical change has been about being connected to what gives me pleasure, whether that's sensual pleasure, sexual pleasure, social pleasure. Who are the people who make me feel good when I'm around them? Be around those people even more. You know, what are the things that I do that make me feel good, that make me feel connected to my senses? Is that walking in nature? Is that swimming? You know, is that a spa visit? Is it, you know, spending time with my dog? Like, there are simple things and small things that can connect us to our senses and our pleasure centers. And pleasure really helps us to live in the moment and to stay grounded in what's true and possible in life. And I will also tell everyone to buy a Hitachi, which is a vibrator. I will tell everyone to prioritize their own sexual pleasure and get to know what feels good for you so that you can tell your partners what feels good for you and get more of the thing that feels good.
Wow. As women, we're not taught that.
No. No, and why not? Why not? It's your body. It's got built-in pleasure. Like, it's already there. You just have to access it. Don't be afraid of the sensual side of life and feeling good in your own skin, good in your own body. And I think that is part of what prioritizing that just helps me feel like I live a happy and fulfilled life, whether I'm partnered or not, you know, whether like Prince Charming has come or not.
Oh. That is the perfect way to end this. Well, you're amazing. I have goosebumps. Who doesn't want to be hotter than ever? And I think that really thinking about this, dear listener, take extraordinary care of yourself. Seek out the things that make you happy. Identify your dreams and take action, right? It's like, and all of this is an inside job. Like, how magical was this conversation? Thank you, Erin Keating, for teaching us to be hotter than ever. And my friend, you glow and you are truly hotter than ever. And I'm grateful for this conversation.
Thank you so much, Bella. I really appreciate you and the work you're doing in the world, helping women find joy and happiness and partnership. There's nothing more meaningful.
Thank you. And smart daters, get yourselves out there. If you need to be hotter than ever and you want the lid to your pot, it's time to do Smart Dating Academy. Get on our wait list for our VIP coaching. It's the best investment you will ever make in yourself. And guess what? Just like Erin said, you are worth it, right? You are extraordinary. Take extraordinary care of yourself and have someone help you with this inside job so you can have nothing but fun and experience joy in the dating world. Until next week, I bid you adieu.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love, follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.